A65. Number 2A.
Well, yesterday we were trying to sense a little bit the position of our time, the signs of our time, and therefore to see what is our, should be our main concern, so that we are not mistaking our study of the fundamentals of Christian Science with the reality itself, that we are absolutely constantly aware that the system of Christian Science is symbolizing reality, and that symbols are not the reality itself, so that we are constantly aware that that which goes on within our consciousness is the real thing, is the main thing, and through those symbolism of the 7,000-year period, I think we could show how we could check a bit on what is going on within ourselves, if we are up to date or if we are still thinking mainly in the 3,000-year period or in the 4,000-year period or perhaps even in the 5,000 period, whereas we should see that we are progressive in our consciousness. We should always be ahead of the time, really. And with science, we should be the most progressive thinkers in the world. And therefore, we must recognize the signs of the time. Now, we have seen yesterday that the end of the 6,000-year period is there, where we begin to see that the science is the idea. Not that a person is the idea, like with Jesus Christ, where the person Jesus was the Christ. He showed the unity of the symbol and the idea, but that is not the pinnacle. And he prophesied that there would be another comforter and that he would teach the whole truth. Therefore, he indicated that the future generation would have to go a step further than that. And so Christian Science came, and instead of the Jesus Christ, we have the science of Christ, and must see that we see that the all important thing is to understand this science. That is the idea. But still, we have to recognize that we are at the threshold of a new 1,000-year period, and that somehow, in order to be progressive and in advance of the age, we must recognize that sign. And we have seen that the 7,000-year period is going even further than just the show that science is the idea, but to see that actually we have only to do with the capitalized terms and not put the accent on idea, as we do today in the study and in the practice. That means that the direction that is pointed out for us is really to see that consciousness is aware that the own reality are the capitalized terms. Sorry, I have to be very clear and specific about that, that the only reality is that which can be touched through the capitalized terms. So that actually the only symbol that is left there are the capitalized terms. Still, you see that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, word, Christ, Christianity and science are still symbols. But now devoid of so many human connotations that it approaches and approximates more and more reality itself. Can you see that? So that we begin to think much more in terms of the capitalized term themselves, just in those terms. Well, because those terms do not need to be expressed through the manifold ideas characterizing these seven synonymous terms, we have no more sentences. We can no more think in sentences. And therefore, instead of thinking in sentences, we have to think in categories. Now, can you see sentences are always linear. They are one-dimensional. Our thinking in sentences goes always from one term to the next term. It's linear, and it's only one-dimensional. We are not used to think in many dimensions at once. We are brought up through thousands of years to think in a reasoning way from one point to the next point in a sequence, and that's the only way the human mind is reasoning in general. So, if we begin to see that that becomes obsolete, we begin to see that our reasoning in the capitalized terms must be according to another directive. Instead of a linear sequence, it is in the direction of categories. We are reasoning in categories and at the same time at least in three categories. And therefore, that is not possible anymore for the human mind. That is only possible when, through the 6,000-year period, we have touched the synonymous term, the tonality of the synonymous term, the tonality of mind, and mind is conscious of itself in all three levels at once, because mind does not need a time sequence in reasoning things out. It's always one mind, it's always a present mind, it's the mind that is right here and now. And so you can see again what was the purpose of the syllabus class, because we tried constantly to educate ourselves by going by first knowing what are the ideas of mind and spirit and soul, then contemplating these ideas for the one and only purpose to get the tonality of mind and not the tonality of the ideas. So we go out from mind, knowing not what mind is through the ideas, then seeing the ideas of mind and getting acquainted with the ideas of mind. For what purpose? To find ourselves finally there, where we just are aware of mind and spirit and soul in one tone and no more in ideas. And that is the prerequisite that leads us into the 7,000-year period, where we can begin, and easily to begin, just to be aware in consciousness of the capitalized terms. You will see that as you get cultured in that tonality, that finally, or already now, I would say that it doesn't really take another 1,000 years for us, but that already now, I'm quite sure that one or the other begins to feel, I give my treatments just in capitalized terms, and no more in specific ideas. That in my treatment, thought just flows according to the capitalized terms. And if we get the rhythm and the flow of this capitalized term and the interrelationship of these three categories, then thought flows, or consciousness, it's no more thought, it's really consciousness, flows in an absolute easy way, in a flow chart, in a flow of these capitalized terms interrelated with the three categories. And that is the new consciousness. And you can see that in that new consciousness, you see, we are freed then of all that which has gone before in the first 5,000-6,000-year periods. We are then no more interested in the creative, in the creative myth, in the what did I call them? Creative myth. Now in the myth of creation. Huh? That we constantly say, who am I, from where do I come from, who is my creator? The I is out of the picture. The moment we are conscious of capitalized terms, the little I, my personal I, just does not play anymore any role. And so when that happens, we are no more interested in the sagas and the legends. We are no more interested in what people say about themselves, what people say about us, what their opinion is about us. We are no more concerned if they feel we are dotty or if we are nuts or if we are on the gone off the track or so. It just doesn't touch us because we discard them as myths, sagas, legends, and so on. We are not even any more interested in the tribal history. Who is Abraham? Who is my father? Who were his sons? What is my family? What are my daughters? What are my sons? What is my husband? What is my wife? Not even that. The tribal history has gone because God doesn't know anything of that sort. If you ask God if he knows my family, he says, I don't know what you're talking about. I am only conscious of mind and spirit and soul and principle, life, truth and love, and that's what I'm conscious of. That's the reality of being. See, it scars us even of the prophetic age where we constantly feel I should know more, I should have a new revelation, I should know this and I should know that. Even that goes because mind is his own knowledge, because mind is conscious of itself. Therefore, has not even anymore that drive to constantly feel I should know more, I should have a bigger revelation, I should understand this and understand that. Can you see? It's not even anymore interested in the 5,000-year period to try to live up to the idea. We cannot live up to the idea when God is all. When God lives himself, then that whole question of living up to Christian Science and live Christian Science and all that trash that is going on, you know, you have to demonstrate it, you have to live it, you have to be it, and all these things. It's just that 5,000-year period, which is no more our period. Because if you ask mind, spirit, soul, and especially life, truth, and love, how should I live up to it? They say, I don't know what you're talking about. I am life, and life lives itself. I am truth, and truth demonstrates itself. I am love, and love fulfills itself. What are you talking? There is nothing to be demonstrated by man. I, God, life, truth, and love, live myself, demonstrate myself, fulfill myself, and that's the reality of being. Can you see how it helps if you ask these questions about what is symbol and what is the true fact of reality? That even that point we can see that something more is necessary. And so we come to the 6,000-year period, to that wonderful preparatory period that leads to the 7,000-year period, where it helps us to get away from oneself, from people universe, to the idea universe, where you have only to contemplate the capitalized term and their ideas. And there is no people universe, there is no business universe, there is no family universe, there is no political universe there is no national universe there, nothing is anymore there. If you ask God Almighty, do you agree with the politics of the world? Do you agree with our president? Do you agree with America? Do you agree with the Russians and so on? He says, I don't know what you're talking about. I am God. There is none besides me. So don't concentrate on anything else but on God himself. That is the only reality working and working and working going on. And so we lift ourselves above the mist and muddle of what's going on in the world, and only then we are a help to the universe, we are a savior to the universe, we help the world, not by digging into the muddle, into the political muddle and military muddle and financial muddle and business muddle of the world. Stand above it. That's the 6,000-year period that begins to culture us into thinking only in terms of ideas. That's the syllabus class. And now the point is that we have to be aware that we can't halt there. Do you say halt there? Stall there? That we have to get on. And I'm quite sure that in the measure that you have been doing this study and the exercise and exercising the tonality of the synonymous term that suddenly you came at the point where you said, I think I can drop all those ideas. I've got such a close and definite and clear-cut sense of what the synonymous term are, that that is quite enough. That includes within self all the ideas, and so you get the tonality of the ideas, and you begin to think in terms of capitalized terms. But because these capitalized terms belong to three categories, thought also begins to accept the divine infinite calculus. It begins to reason constantly in those three categories. That there is a nature of God, 7, that this nature of God has a definite calculus, definite operation of God, the 4 sides, and this week we'll consider more closely that those 4 sides and the 7 operate on every level of existence. On every level of existence. That's the 4 levels then. So that we do not exclude the saving of the world by going up to the point of the 7,000-year period where we just are conscious of the tonality of the capitalized term. We do not exclude the world and the problems of the world, but we have a standpoint that operates so that it operates on every level of consciousness, but it operates and not we have to make it operate. So we are not going up to cloud 9 in doing that, but much more that we are handling the old questions that have been the question since the beginning of the 1,000-year period, that we are beginning to handle those questions from a completely different standpoint, from a higher standpoint. Yes. So that is what I wanted to bring out yesterday, with those 7,000-year periods. And you could see that it all indicates some kind of, can you say, an interrogation into oneself, an introspection into oneself, and asking oneself, where are you? Where are you? Not so much, Adam, where are you? But now, where are you spiritually? At which level are you? What is your concern in your life? What is your innermost in your consciousness? Which attitude is the dominant within you? And that brings me to another question that I would like to touch this week at the beginning, before we start with the levels. Something that I felt I would like to bring out, or at least to pinpoint at this stage to the class, and has to do with what we have been talking about up to now, namely the question, where are you? Where am I spiritually? And for quite a few years, this has been gathering more and more importance. I begin to see more and more the great necessity for asking this question, because you know that John Dolly, and then afterwards I have picked it up, made quite a big thing out of scientific obstetrics. That one felt, all right, we have to give birth to our true manhood. And that is a process, and it's an ordered process, and scientific obstetrics shows us in an ordered way how to give birth to what we truly are, so that the immortal will take over and will put on immortality and drop off mortality. And so we have put quite a lot of stress or importance on that paragraph. And as I said, over the last few years, one began to feel very much that was taking, that paragraph was being taken a bit out of context. If you know the structure of that chapter, you know that it appears at the tone of love as spirit in the chapter. Therefore, it's taken out of context. It should start at least with love as mind, so that one has a kind of a good ground on which to build that paragraph on scientific obstetrics. The tone that goes, that precedes it, love as mind, is what Mrs. Eddy calls mental anatomy. So before we have the birth, we should have a right anatomy, out of which really the birth can come. And I felt that one has perhaps neglected that paragraph too much and just has been poring over the scientific obstetrics, though in that little booklet which we have given out as free literature, I have at that time given some accent and importance on that mental anatomy. But today I think I want to bring out one or the other point in that paragraph which is of great importance to us. Namely, that mental anatomy deals with that very question I have put forward: where are you? Where are you inwardly, spiritually? What is your aim in life? What is uppermost in your heart? Why are you studying Christian Science? What is the motive behind it? And it seems to be all about the true motive, the true desire. Is that motive right? Is that motive divine? Or is it human? Is it egotistic? I remember that in earlier years, when I was a young student, I have given to that paragraph much more importance than perhaps in the later 10 or 20 years. And so perhaps I can correct that a little bit today by bringing out the very importance of this mental anatomy. The text of that mental anatomy reads like this, and I don't want to take every word, but I like just to flow through it, and I read the text. It says, anatomy when conceived spiritually. So it hasn't anything to do with the anatomy of our bodily structure of bones and the skeleton, and how many bones we have and how many muscles we have, etc. It's a spiritual body, it's a spiritual anatomy, it's a spiritual constituents that are under discussion. So anatomy, when conceived of spiritually, is mental self-knowledge. So it begins with that great question which I have asked: do we know what is within us? It begins with the mental self-knowledge. Usually we think, well, everybody knows what he is, and it's quite natural that we know what we are and what we want and what we drive at and what are our desires and motives. Naturally, we don't know. It's all superficial, it's all what perhaps is in the consciousness, but not in the subconsciousness. And therefore we have to dig deeper and question ourselves much more deeply than what we have done perhaps up to now. And so it's mental self-knowledge. So just now, one keynote is that self-knowledge: do I know myself? It's therefore not the question, do I know the system of Christian Science, or do I know the categories, and do I know all the ramifications of the system? It's first asked, do you know yourself first? And how do you know yourself? And so it consists in the dissection of thoughts to discover their quality, quantity and origin. She gives her here three different elements that we have to consider. What is the quality of it, of what we know about ourselves? Is that a good quality or a bad quality? The quantity, asking what has the preponderance, what is foremost within our consciousness, that's the quantity of it. And the origin naturally gives then the key. Are these quantities and qualities from a divine source or not from a divine source? Is the origin in God or not? So, giving this line of how to reason, she goes on and says, we have to ask therefore the very first thing, namely, are thoughts divine or human? So this is the very first question, that if we ask ourselves, do I know what is within me? Do I know the quality of what motivates me? We just have to ask ourselves, well, where do these qualities come from? Are they human desires? Are they divine desires? Do they come from God or from us? That, she says, is the important question. So up to now we had 2 points, self-knowledge, and then asking that this is one super important question. Perhaps we have never really asked that question to ourselves. We have taken it for granted that we love Christian Science, that we want to follow it, that we are going to study it, that we are going to give all our heart to it, without actually asking what is the motivating power within us. This branch of study is indispensable to the excision of error. So you can see, she says, this is very important because here all the error starts. If we want to get rid of error, we really have to start right here at the origin. What motivates us? What is the quality and quantity that motivates us? And so it's necessary really for the excision of error first to know ourselves properly in that way.